Leviticus 25 and 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." And I'd like to say good morning to everyone and welcome you to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. This is Pastor Wynn Greer of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. And we appreciate the church and them supporting the radio ministry, this broadcast. And I'd like to say good morning to Noah. He's here with me today. How are you today, Noah?
I'm doing good. It's good to be here. I have one announcement we need to make. We're having revival coming up beginning this Sunday morning at March 18th at 11 a.m. And we'll be back again at 2 p.m. We'll have evangelist Ben Carper of the Bright Spot Hour with us. And then Monday through Wednesday at 7 p.m., we're going to have special singing with each service. And for more information, you can call the church phone number, 828-963-4596.
I appreciate that. And we appreciate our listeners listening in on WATA and also on 690 AM WZAP over in Bristol. And we are looking forward to revival coming up this weekend. And Brother Benny Carper is going to be with us. And so we'd love for you to come out. We'll try to make that announcement one more time before we go off the air today. And we'd love for you to come and to be with us in our revival services. Looking forward to a good time in the Lord and in the Word of God. If you've never heard Brother Benny, he is a very able Bible teacher and preacher. And so we're looking forward to hearing from the Word of God. Now, last week, I announced that we were going to discuss, Noah and I have both read this book, and it's very interesting little book. Actually, I heard about it from Pastor Eric Cornett. He's a pastor at Mountaindale in Green Valley, and we were talking about it, or he brought this to my attention, and then I was able to get a copy of it. And the name of this book, it's by a man named Andy Andrews. The name of the book is How Do You Kill 11 Million People? Why the Truth Matters More Than You Think. And it's just a small little book. It's about 72 pages, I think, or 80 pages. Now, I've got it on a Kindle, so you don't flip the pages. But, you know, I have read the book. But best I can tell, it's about 72, 80 pages, somewhere around in there. And it's a very thought-provoking little book. The subject is self-explanatory. How do you kill 11 million people? Why the truth matters more than you think. And that's what we want to look at today and talk about today and try to make some scriptural applications as well. And also try to be, as we read about in the book of Ezekiel, chapter number 33, to be a watchman upon the wall and sound the trumpet. And certainly we do need to be aware of what is going on in the day and time in which we live. Now, I will admit that's a pretty dark subject to bring up. Most people would not sit around and think about that. I wonder how you could kill 11 million people. I mean, that wouldn't even be right. If a person sat around and thought about how to do that, we would say they need to go to the doctor. You know, they need to talk to somebody. They need to have some counseling. And so most people don't sit around and think about a subject like that. But of course, you probably already know the aim is actually to get us thinking, how in the world did that happen? Could something like that happen again? And so that's the object of the book, is to get people thinking about how something like this could even take place. If you know anything about world history, and I'm talking about recent world history, you will know that the 20th century was one of the most deadly centuries as far as by governments that has ever been in the history of the world. If you study about Hitler, he's only one of the greatest mass murderers of all time. Modern governments are responsible for deaths in the millions of their own citizens. I know just from recent history, if you study about Cambodia, you know, our nation was involved in Vietnam, and then it spilled over into Cambodia. And from 1975 to 1979, there were over 3 million citizens in Cambodia killed by their own government. The Soviet Union, 61,911,000 people. From 1917 to 1987, that is by their own record keeping. That number is so astounding that it's hard to imagine 61 million people put to death by their own government. North Korea, in recent years, 3 million people. China, 25 to 35 million people from 1949 to 1976. And on we could go. But the subject we're looking at, the subtitle, is what I really want to pay attention to today. It says, Why the Truth Matters More Than You Think. Why the Truth Matters More Than You Think. And the little book opens up with John chapter 8 and verse number 32, where Jesus says this, And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And he says in that book that the opposite would be true as well. To not know the truth would bring a person in bondage. And so truth is very, very important. Truth is a subject that everybody ought to be interested in. Even in the Bible, in John chapter number 18, when Jesus was put on trial by Pilate. Pilate, a lost man. Pilate, what would be considered, looking back now on the Bible, he was a pagan. He was a heathen. He was an idolater. But Pilate was interested in the truth to the point that he asked the Lord Jesus Christ. John chapter 8 and verse 38, he said, What is truth? And so truth is very, very important. You know, my daughter and I, we went to town yesterday, and she has her driver's permit now. So she was driving, and of course, when somebody else is driving, that gives you the opportunity to look around a little bit. And as we were leaving our house and passing by the neighborhood that I grew up in, I noticed that one of our neighbors had cut down a big tree in their yard. And I made the statement, you know, you could see the stump and all the, it had already been cut up into firewood, big old pieces, or not firewood, but it getting ready to be split. And so it was laying around in the yard, you know, and I said, they cut that big tree. And my daughter said to me, she said, do you have memories of playing in that when you were a little boy? And I told her, I said, no, I've never really noticed it until they cut it down. And you know, I think that's how a lot of people are going to be concerning our country. We'll wake up one day and it's going to be gone, and we paid very little attention. Most people have paid very little attention to our nation, the why of our nation, where our nation's principles come from, what has made our nation great, and people have paid very little attention. But if you wake up one day and it's gone, well, it's going to be too late. And a lot of people just don't notice things until they're gone. And our nation is in a very precarious position right now. And I realize that's a very strong statement to make. But Mr. Obama, whether you like him or whether you don't, he is going about to accomplish exactly what he campaigned to do. And he said during his campaign that the thrust of it was to fundamentally transform America, to fundamentally transform America. And he is going about to do that. And he has plenty of help, lots of help. The Bushes have helped. The Clintons have helped. The media has helped. The Congress, the Senate, Hollywood. You trace back big amounts of money in our nation. There's a lot of people trying to change our country from what made it great into something else. Now, they don't call themselves liberals anymore. They've been labeled as being liberal, but Hillary Clinton, when she was running back in 2008, when she was running for president, she said during one of the debates, she said, I consider myself to be a progressive. And there is such a thing as the progressive movement. And for the last 100 years, or right around in there, progressives have been hard at work trying to change America from what it was to what they envision it to be. But we need to ask ourselves a question. People need to realize and know that this is going on. What do they want to change it to? And why that do they want to change it? These are all good questions that we could ask ourselves. Now, I have an excerpt from a speech. In fact, I have the whole speech, but I don't have time to get into to the whole thing. But I want to just share a little bit from a speech by Calvin Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge, he was a president. And he made this speech on the 150th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And in this speech, he rejected progressivism, the whole thing, and defends the founding principles of our nation. He delivered this speech July the 5th, 1926. July the 5th, 1926, and I don't have time to read all of it, but if you can look it up on the internet, it'd help you to read the whole thing. But anyway, he's talking about, the name of the speech was The Inspiration of the Declaration, and he says this about the Declaration. He says, "No one can examine this record and escape the conclusion that in the great outline of its principles, the Declaration was the result of the religious teachings of the preceding period, the profound philosophy which Jonathan Edwards applied to theology." Now, Jonathan Edwards, he preached that famous sermon, "Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God," and he was greatly used during the time period called the Great Awakening. The Great Awakening took place just prior to the American Revolution and had a great impact upon the founding of our nation. So he said, "The profound philosophy which Jonathan Edwards applied to theology, the popular preaching of George Whitefield," those of you that have listened any time at all to the radio broadcast, Blessings of Liberty, you know I've mentioned George Whitefield time and time and time again. He talks about the popular preaching of George Whitefield had aroused the thought and stirred the people of the colonies in preparation for this great event. Talking about in preparation to the Declaration of Independence. He said, "But when we come to a contemplation of the immediate conception of the principles of human relationship which went into the Declaration of Independence, we are not required to extend our search beyond our own shores. They are found in the text, the sermons, and the writings of the early colonial clergy, who were earnestly undertaking to instruct their congregations in the great mystery of how to live. These pastors of these churches were trying to teach their people the proper and the right form of government, and they got their ideas from the Word of God." Now, that's interesting. 150 years after the Declaration of Independence, they were attributing it to the religious teachings just prior to the Declaration of Independence. Now, here's what I really want to get to, and I want you to really pay attention to what is said here. He said, "About the Declaration, there is a finality that is exceedingly restful. It is often asserted that the world has made a great deal of progress since 1776, that we have had new thoughts and new experiences which have given us a great advance over the people of that day, and that we may therefore very well discard their conclusions for something more modern." Now, what he's saying is there's a lot of people that say, get rid of the Declaration of Independence. It's old. We've learned a lot of things in the past, in the time since then. That's what he is saying there. He says, "But that reasoning cannot be applied to this great charter. If all men are created equal, that is final. If they are endowed with inalienable rights, that is final. If governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, that is final. No advance, no progress can be made beyond these propositions. If anyone wishes to deny their truth or their soundness, The only direction in which he can proceed historically is not forward, but backward, toward the time when there was no equality, no rights of the individual, no rule of the people. Those who wish to proceed in that direction cannot lay claim to progress. They are reactionary. Their ideas are not more modern, but more ancient than those of the revolutionary fathers. What Calvin Coolidge was saying at the 150-year anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, he says there's nothing greater, because in the Declaration of Independence we see that man has inalienable rights from our Creator. We're all created equal in the sight of God, and so you cannot go any farther than that. If you want to change from that, the only example is to go backwards. And my friends, that's where we're going in America today. These progressives, they're not wanting to take us to something in the future, something greater than we already have. They're wanting to take us backwards. They're not progressing forward. They're taking the nation and the country and the people backwards into history. He said, no other theory is adequate to explain or comprehend the Declaration of Independence. It is the product of the spiritual insight of the people. We live in an age of science and of abounding accumulation of material things. These did not create our declaration. Our declaration created them. The things of the spirit must come first. Unless we cling to that, all our material prosperity, overwhelming though it may appear, will turn to a barren scepter in our grasp. If we are to maintain the great heritage which has been bequeathed to us, we must be like-minded as the fathers who created it. We must not sink into a pagan materialism. We must cultivate the reverence which they had for the things that are holy. We must follow the spiritual and moral leadership which they showed. We must keep replenished that they may glow with a more compelling flame the altar fires before which they worshiped. And so I say to you today, our leaders are not taking us forward. They are taking us backwards. They're taking us backwards to a time when there was no equality, no rights of the people, no rule of the people. And here's the sad thing. We're allowing that to take place in our nation today. You see, in America, we the people are the sovereign. We are the king. That's the most important words in the Constitution, is we the people. We are the king. We are the sovereign. But if the people become disengaged from the political process, it won't take long for the power and the process to be stolen and to be subverted. And that is where we are in America today. Plato said this, and Mr. Andrews quotes this in his book. Plato said, the punishment which the wise suffer who refuse to take part in the government is to live under the government of worse men. And that's where we get he's talking about people that won't take part in government. That's where we get our word idiot from. The word idiot is a Greek word. It comes from Greek society, idiota. And in the Greek society, an idiota was a person who refused to take part in the democratic process. An idiot refused to take part. An idiot said, I don't like politics. I don't want to talk about, we have a lot of idiots in our society. You can't talk about religion and politics to anybody. It might make them mad. Well, we become a nation of idiots. We become a nation that doesn't even know where we come from, why we come from, where we're going to. Just tell me who won the ball game. That's what most people are concerned about. And so we can't discuss religion or politics. Well, if that's how your attitude is, that makes you an idiot. And I'm not being mean. I'm saying there's a historical basis for that word. People who refuse to take part in or to be concerned about or care about or in the political process. It makes a person an idiot, makes them foolish, makes them stupid. How do you kill 11 million people? I'd like for you to get that book and read it if you can. Noah, you read the book as well. How is it that you kill 11 million people?
You lie to them.
Just that?
That's it.
That's what the book, that's the whole reason for the whole book. How do you kill 11 million people? You lie to them. Hitler said this. This is in the book I'm quoting. Hitler said, how fortunate for leaders. Now, this is what he said to his inner circle. He didn't say this in his speeches, but he said this, how fortunate for leaders that men do not think. Make the lie big. Make it simple. Keep saying it, and eventually they will believe it. Do you know, in our country, people are elected, and the people that elect them know that they're electing a bunch of liars. They know that these politicians will say anything and promise anything to get elected, and boy, they get up there. I watch some of them debates. Man, don't they do good. I mean, they say things that people can just get behind and say, that's right, that's right. We need to, this example's given in the book, we need to reform our tax system. It's too complicated. Politicians have promised that for years. Nothing is ever done about it. They're a bunch of liars. You know, if you lie, if you have an established pattern of lying, that makes you a liar. But people, they just believe these lies. Oh, yeah, so-and-so's going to get in there, and they're really going to do this and do that. Well, if you believe that, I've got beachfront property up here in Watauga County. I'd like to talk to you about buying. You know, people believe these lies. Hitler said, make the lie big. Say it over and over, and people will eventually believe it. This also is in the book. This is interesting. Hitler said this. He said, according to record, what Hitler actually said in his speeches depended very much upon the audience. Doesn't that sound familiar today? You know, they say what sounds good to who they're talking to. Well, that's how Hitler was. Hitler actually said in his speech, according to record, what Hitler actually said in his speeches depended very much upon the audience. Listen to this. In agricultural areas, he pledged tax cuts for farmers and new laws to protect food prices. In working neighborhoods, he talked about redistribution of wealth and attacked the high profits generated by business owners. Now, that's not picking on somebody using that phrase, redistribution of wealth. Unless you've lived under a rock for the past several years, you've heard that phrase over and over and over again. Hitler talked about redistribution of wealth. Hitler attacked the high profits that were generated by business owners. There is a historically based reason why certain leaders are compared to Hitler and the Nazis, because they're talking about the same things. When they come along talking about redistribution of wealth, that is Nazi doctrine. That is what got Hitler propelled to leadership in the country. He was going to make it all equal. Well, I guess death is no respecter of persons, so in a sense, he did redistribute the wealth, but you have to ask, how did he redistribute the wealth? And so there's a reason. Now, if you compare certain people to Hitler, boy, that'll get you fried. I mean, that'll get you castigated from the mainstream media and all of that stuff. But study your history books and see what truth is. Truth matters. And if it looks like a duck, acts like a duck, walks like a duck, it might be a duck. And so we need to pay attention what's going on. And so the little book, I'd like for you to read it. I think every preacher ought to read this book. I think every leader in the community, I think teachers in schools ought to get this book and read it. How do you kill 11 million people? You lie to them. I want to read just a little bit. Now, he talks about in this book, there's a man called Adolf Eichmann. He was known as the master. He's the one who was given the responsibility to direct the what they called the final solution, and that was to kill all the Jews. And he was the director over that. The book said Eichmann went about the task as if he were president of a multinational corporation. He set ambitious goals, recruited enthusiastic staff, and monitored the progress. And so it goes on down. I'm not going to read all of this. But he He lied to the people. An intricate web of lies to be delivered in stages was designed to ensure the cooperation of the condemned but unknowing Jews. First, as barbed wire fences were erected, encircling entire neighborhoods, Eichmann or his representatives met with Jewish leaders to assure them that the physical restrictions being placed upon their community were only temporary necessities of war. As long as they cooperated, he told them, no harm would come to those inside the fence. Now, there are, let me read from sworn testimony to those who heard Eichmann's speeches. He would actually go out himself, accompanied by an entourage of no more than 30 local men. He would go out and talk to the people in the ghettos, the Jewish people in the ghettos. And he would go out and talk to them and assure them. And he would go out with no more than 30 local men and officers of his own. Many were unarmed. And he would address the crowd in a strong, clear voice. According to testimony, these were likely his exact words. And he would stand up and he would say, Jews, at last it can be reported to you that the Russians are advancing on our eastern front. I apologize for the hasty way we brought you into our protection. Unfortunately, there was little time to explain. You have nothing to worry about. Boy, if you hear a politician say that, you'd better turn around and run. You have nothing to worry about. We want only the best for you. You will leave here shortly and be sent to very fine places indeed. You will work there. Your wives will stay at home and your children will go to school. You will have wonderful lives. We will all be terribly crowded on the trains, but the journey is short. Men, please keep your families together and board the rail cars in an orderly manner. Quickly now, my friends, we must hurry. And so the fathers and the husbands would help their families onto the rail cars, and they would put them in a rail car that was designed for 8 cows, and they'd put 100 people in a rail car, and they'd padlock the door shut, and that was the beginning of the end. But it was interesting to me, I underlined that part, where he said, you have nothing to worry about. Boy, when you hear those words come from Washington or many other places, you'd better pay attention. You know, that's what they said about the Patriot Act when George Bush, took away our, they can eavesdrop on your emails, listen to your phone conversations. That's what they said. Well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about. And then, same thing with the, I've talked recently about the National Defense Authorization Act. That makes it all right to take American citizens and detain them without due process and whisk them away to another country and lock them up and give them no trial, no jury, no lawyer. Well, what did Obama say? He come along and he said, American citizens, why, you've got nothing to worry about. He said at first he wouldn't sign it, and then he did. They asked Mitt Romney if he would sign it, and he said, well, yes, that he would, I'll tell you. We better pay attention to what's going on in this country. What about undeclared wars in the name of the United Nations? What about personal privacy and civil liberties and gun laws and all of these things? We're continually told you've got nothing to worry about. I'll tell you, in America, if we do not wake up soon, we'll be murdered in our sleep. And that'll include everybody. That'll include the conservatives and the liberals and Republicans and the Democrats and the Christians and the Jews and the non-believers. And it'll just be all of us together. And I'll tell you, I know that's sort of a dark subject to worry about, but we need a spiritual awakening in our country. We need some watchman upon the wall to blow the trumpet. Read Ezekiel chapter number 33. And so whosoever heareth the sound of the trumpet and taketh not warning, if a sword come and take him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. We need to pray for our nation, our country. I appreciate you listening in. Oh, how we need to wake up, pay attention, talk to somebody, pray for our country. And so our time is quickly come and gone today. Thank you for listening. Noah's going to give you the information. We'd love for you to come out to revival. Starting this Sunday and then Monday through Wednesday night.
This has been Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to reach us, our church phone number is 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at www.mountlebanonbc.org.